This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
On this week's episode of Red Dead Radio, we talk Tombstone, tons of Red Dead Redemption 2 news, our starting playthrough with the original Red Dead Redemption, and mustaches.
Yeehaw!
If you enjoy Red Dead Redemption, check out reddeadradio.com to find out more, and if you want to back the show, I'd be glad to have you do it there. Red Dead Radio is a part of Hot Blip and a Jump. Hello, friends. Welcome to Red Dead Radio, the Red Dead Redemption podcast. I'm your host, Jared Petty, and I'm joined by today's wild, wild guest.
Yee-haw! It's Greg Miller, everybody!
Not understated, as expected.
That's what you'd expect. When you bring Greg Miller on a podcast, you expect understated. You expect not to blow up people's speakers.
No, definitely not. Not going to frighten anybody there.
No.
As always, going straight to the wild, wild guest, Greg. We are right here to talk about Red Dead Redemption and all things related to it, which means I got to ask you, what's your relationship to Red Dead Redemption? Where's that begin?
Dude, I love Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah?
I remember it very well, obviously. I was working at IGN when it was coming out. Obviously, we were all super stoked because it was Rockstar. It was, you know, it was Rockstar doing something different outside of the GTA world, but keeping so many of the things we loved. And the fact that, you know, cowboy games aren't happening all that often, and great cowboy games aren't happening all that often, right? And I had, for Red Dead Revolver, I had never played.
Okay.
And I had played Gun instead.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Gun a lot.
Gun keeps coming up. I think we're just gonna have to have a gun centric episode.
Gun was great. It's you know, it's a game that was so good Portillo pissed on my lap because I wouldn't walk him, because I was like, let me beat this boss, and little puppy Portillo finally just climbed in my lap and looked me in the eyes and peed all over
well
me.
That's kind of not his fault.
Not at all.
You very take much guy out. Yeah.
But it was my first dog, and he was, you know, he was a puppy. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But
that was all, a puppy. This was almost a decade ago.
I know, right? I was living in Missouri, sitting in my Columbia, Missouri 2-bedroom apartment after college.
Wow. Which probably cost less than a studio.
Don't even want to know how much. You want to know how much that cost?
I'd love to know.
2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment in Columbia, Missouri, post college, $500.
There you go. Yeah. That's fantastic. I rented a house in North Carolina for about that much before I moved
here. Yeah. But then, went to IGN. Red Dead started becoming a thing, and we started, you know, covering it. And I remember it was one of my favorite previews, I think, ever, where myself, Eric Brudvig, and Hillary Goldstein went to the Rockstar loft that they used to have in downtown SF, and we all played. And the idea was we were all going to do something different. And I think it was that, I'm rusty now. Brudvig played the good guy, I played the bad guy, and Hillary just walked. He just walked. He didn't do anything. I'm going to walk off this way and see what I could find.
Okay.
And so at the end, you know, we finished, we all wrote our previews, but it was like sitting down and talking to each other about choices that were different and how this played out that way. And it's like the random stuff we'd all find was amazing.
Did you enjoy being a white hat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was that your decision that you were going to be the good guy? I mean,
Brudvig, I think, played the good guy.
Were the bad guy. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Well, my apologies.
Because when the game eventually drops, I knew I was going to play the good guy. I'm going to be the good guy, Jim.
All right.
The comic books and Superman for 30-odd years of my life or whatever.
So there is no man in the black hat? There's no secret Ed Harris inside your heart when it comes to...
No, of course not.
You're the good man. You're going to be the hero.
I mean, like, you know, jumping ahead, when I get Red Dead and I'm so invested in it, this is one of my... If you're a Kind of Funny fan or a Greg Miller fan in general, maybe you've lapsed since I dropped off the face of the earth.
Well, yeah. I mean, you haven't been around.
Anywhere.
Yeah, you're
out
of the public eye.
My definitive Red Dead story is this, that I had played the entire game as a good guy, John Marston, doing the right choices, doing the right things, saving people, being good. And I completed the side quest, right, that you don't fully understand, you're just doing stuff, but it was to get the flowers for the old man to give to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it to him, and he's like, all right, come on in and meet her. And we walked in. He's like such a lovely old man. We've been chatting the whole time. We walk in, and as many people remember, I would assume, and spoilers if not, his wife is dead. And she's just a mummified corpse in the rocking chair. And he gives it, and this man clearly suffering from dementia and just can't keep it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And it popped up, side quest completed or whatever. John Marston, I walked John out of the house, walked him in front of the house. And in like one of the most like, for me, cinematic poignant moments, right? Tilted the camera up, saw this beautiful vista. And as Greg Miller in real life, but as John Marsden, I went, deep sigh. And then I opened the menu and I put on the bandit mask for the first time ever. The first time ever, put on the bandit mask to hide my identity. I walked back into the house, walked behind him, and shot him once in the head.
Wow.
And it wasn't me. It wasn't the GTA. Let's get 5 stars and fuck with the cops. It wasn't me. Like, I've killed 100 innocent people. This was a definitive moment in my narrative of Red Dead Redemption that belonged solely to me, but was influenced by the character I'd created and who I thought John was. And the fact that this guy, he's not living anymore. This, you know what I mean? Like, all these, I have to euthanize him.
No, that kind of story and the decision you made there, compelled by the narrative to do something that had no particular gameplay repercussions. It was about the story that emerged around you. Chris Kohler, who I'm a big fan of, works over at Kotaku, likes to point out that GTA games are about telling those stories. They are about emergent stories happening and telling your friends and the people around you about this thing that only happened to you.
You were on your way to the same quest everybody does, but a bobcat attacked you and you tumbled off, and then these guys came and you got involved with them and chased them and found a new side mission.
And I think that Red Dead does that, honestly, in many ways even better than GTA.
I agree.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it is GTA is always going to have a parodic edge to it. Red Dead has a little of that in the movies, the motion pictures and stuff, but mostly Red Dead plays it pretty straight.
Well, Red Dead was just so crazy, right? Because it just gave you, in Red Dead Redemption 1, because it just gave you this giant, open, wild, wild west. You know what I mean? And like,
wiki.
Even with GTA, you were you had the constraints of the city. You know what I mean? And so like, venturing, you never ventured in with, in a, now obviously they've tooled around with this in 5 and stuff. And, but I mean, venturing outside of the city, it wasn't that you were going to run into necessarily something awesome. It wasn't that you're going to run into nothing. You know what I mean? Getting on a horse and just riding off into the desert and just seeing tumbleweeds and cactus and nothing else.
Breath of the Wild was the first time I'd felt that feeling since Red Dead. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to pinpoint what it was focusing in on. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I remember this. This is less chatty Red Dead.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked when that realization kind of clicked in. Breath of the Wild obviously built on that structure quite a bit and did some innovative new things. But fundamentally, that sense of wonder at the wilderness around you and emptiness, that game realized very well.
And I feel like, for me personally, it's something I take a little bit for granted now with your Ubisoft game. Air quotes about run Ubisoft, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, cool, this is going to be an open world checkbox game. You know what I mean? I'm going to go through and cross things off my to-do list.
Yeah.
And that obviously has been in gaming forever, but for Red Dead, it was the first one where I wanted to do everything. I wanted to go hunt everything. I wanted to upgrade everything. I wanted to see everything. And that's happened in games before, but I remember distinctly doing things that I don't think I would have done. Like hunting before, I don't think was really a turn on to me in other games, whereas this one was of like, okay, cool. I'm getting more powerful. I'm doing all these things. I want to get off and figure it out and make it happen.
I see you got a surprise ad in.
I like to get the Kind of Funny.
Pretty amazing.
I like to slide in the Kind of Funny ad whenever I can.
You should check out Kind of Funny. What's this Kind of Funny you speak of?
Kindoffunny.com. We have a whole bunch of video game shows and cooking shows and Game Over Greggy shows and all sorts of stuff.
All kinds of other beautiful
things. Jared comes by at least once a week.
I'd say you're pretty familiar. If you're watching this, I think there's a 99.5% chance you've heard of Kind of Funny.
But another thing about Red Dead of what a moment in time it was for how important it was. And I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Oh.
When was Red Dead Redemption's release date?
That was in 2010, I believe.
May?
Late 2010, I think.
What do you mean? What month
was it? I should know this, but I don't. No, I didn't look it up. Okay. Oh, see? Look here. I'm running a show. I don't know what's going on.
I'm on it.
I don't know what's happening.
Because I think it's there might be some serendipity in play.
I think it was a late 2010 game. That's my remember. He's looking up right now on that there telephone.
On the telephone, as they say. You know, yep, I was right. May 18th,
2010. Look at that. I didn't know it was that early.
The reason I remember this is because as we record this, and even as you listen to it, because it's going up tomorrow, next week I go to E3 Judges Week, where I'm the judge for Kind of Funny. I see a bunch of behind closed doors games and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Other sites can bring other reporters. They just can't go to every event.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, when I worked at IGN for the longest time, I was never the IGN judge, but I was part of the support team. So when these things were open to everybody, I could. I remember going there in 2010, seeing these unreleased games, these things you couldn't talk about till E3, whatever, not being able to go to a bunch of stuff. But I distinctly remember when it was the final day and we had like one last appointment, but we had hours before it, Damon Hatfield, Ty Root, and myself drove to an LA Best Buy to buy Red Dead. It must have been Friday when it
came out. That's a great day.
So that we could come home and I'll just play it when we got there.
Oh,
and it's like such a distinct memory of us all going off to buy that game.
Which is interesting because while it had a multiplayer component, most of the stories I hear people talk about with Red Dead, at least up to this point, are about talking with other people about things that happen in a single player world.
Yeah.
That's fairly rare, I think. Is that your experience? Or?
Yes, no. I feel like it's gotten, I think they were tip of the iceberg on it for a lot of us. I think, you know, and that includes, I think, GTA to an extent, but understanding the story choices here and the different ways you can handle it and your John being different. You think about it now, we take it for granted with a Telltale game. You take it for granted with a God of War where you're out in a world and something's going to spawn on you in a different way than it'll spawn on somebody else. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or a choice you make leading to something different.
We're going to move on to the next segment because there is a lot of news to cover. The next segment being Shootout.
Yeehaw! That's right.
Oh, look, I love this.
I'm all set. I'm ready.
I'm really enjoying the, I didn't expect the yeehaws. I didn't know you had a cowboy hat here.
I have this thanks to Greg Miller in Calgary.
Okay.
He ran for,
other Greg Miller.
Yeah. He ran for an election there.
Yeah.
For whatever, supervisor. He didn't win. But when we hit it off together through the internet, he sent me cowboy hats. Alberta.
That's kind of spectacular.
Yeah.
So other Greg Miller from Alberta sent you cowboy hats. Yeah. Kind of great. So you have plural.
Yeah, there's another one in there, but I think it's for Jen, so it's even smaller.
I don't think that would fit my head.
No.
I'm gonna have to get a custom one for my enormous head. But Shootout, that's where we talk about the Red Dead Redemption 2 news. In case you missed our last episode, we recorded right after the trailer dropped and right before the giant IGN exclusive blowout of Red Dead news. And there has been a lot of Red Dead news, so much so that we may not get to all of it today. But let's talk through a few of these items. So people at IGN have played a slice of Red Dead.
These sons of bitches.
They've gotten hands on.
Yeah.
Holy cow. And we got some first impressions from that. Rather than read the entire article, because it is long, instead, I'm just going to touch
on...
They had a whole bunch of articles. And they've got this kind of cool... plugged to my friends at IGN, got this kind of cool, hey, everything you need to know about Red Dead, all in one place page.
Yeah.
That then links out to all the other individual articles.
I also really appreciate it, you know, when they, you know, you and I are old timers from IGN.
We are.
You know what I mean? Old guard. When they redesigned the front page, I was like, I don't know if I like this. But this just changed, right? However, when they did the Red Dead, that was the first time they did it where all the like the four top images that, all lined up to make one.
It was so cool looking.
That was cool.
Yeah. It looked great. I love that. That was really clever. I also very much enjoyed that. So let's talk about gameplay details because we've been like trailer. Sure is pretty. What about the game? Well, now we know some things about
Lay it
the game.
On me, okay. Jared.
The overall first impression that I get is that this is a entirely new iteration on what we're going to expect from open world gameplay. It's kind of like a place where what I'm seeing here in the preview is if Breath of the Wild and Skyrim kind of met.
Okay.
And from Breath of the Wild, that wide open, beautiful, austere nature. And from Skyrim, that idea that there's a world where something is always happening around you.
Sure.
Where those meet but are amplified.
Okay.
That we may not have a genre nomenclature for exactly what kind of game this is.
Okay.
What I mean by that is we think about open world games mechanically as a guy with an exclamation point over his head.
I'll go to him. I'll get the quest. I'll start that quest. Get to it when I want to. It's in my to-do list.
Exactly. That whole idea of that to-do list.
Yeah.
And that popping up to people and that happening seems to be more organically integrated into the world than we've seen before.
Okay.
You give this base camp you work out of, and everybody has a life. It's not just that there's a guy out sweeping a porch. He goes through a day, and depending on what needs to happen in the camp that day, he's off doing all those things and passing through his cycle, and you can encounter him at any time in that and contextually.
So he's in charge of cooking. So that means he's in charge of making the fire, which means he has to at 4 a.m. or whatever. Not 4
yes.
He's got to march off and get the wood and chop the wood and bring the wood and put it there and move
the
stuff.
Although the impression I get is that maybe, and again, I don't want to put too much projection onto this, but maybe if somebody else made the fire, he might have to do something else. And that when you talk to him, depending on whether he's on his way to the wood or whether the fire is already lit or whether it's day or night or whether you've talked to somebody else, that your interaction with him is going to be entirely different. Plus your moral choices and your attitude.
Gotcha.
And it's going to be kind of invisible under the surface. So you will always have contextual discussions to be able to have with people, but they will not be the same.
Gotcha.
And you won't really know what's making the difference, except that it's natural.
So there's not going to be the clearly, this is the good choice, this is the bad choice, this will lead me to that, that'll lead me to this.
No, what I saw from that preview instead is a world where everybody you interact with, if this works out the way they want it to, you're interacting with in a very real life, the seams are hidden kind of way.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Which I think is rad, because I don't think we've ever, Breath of the Wild kind of did that until you talked to somebody. I mean, Breath of the Wild is all about making your own fun, but that world's empty, and that's why it works.
Yeah.
This seems like the next step on that. Kind of like, you know, Witcher 3 hit that pinnacle of interaction with great story quests, and Breath of the Wild with great immersion. This seems to be, okay, story quest, main quest, side quest?
Yeah.
Not so clear anymore.
Interesting.
This is life, and you're in it.
Okay.
And the narrative classical structure of a video game is much more hidden. And not hidden in a, man, I'm frustrated, I don't know what to do way. Hidden in a, wow, this all makes sense way.
Interesting.
What do you think about that?
That sounds awesome. That's why when I talk about Red Dead, right, I'm not talking, my Red Dead story I tell you isn't the final boss battle of Red Dead, right? It isn't the lead up to John getting his perfect life to, you know, then having it all ripped away. It's me telling you some inane story. Totally a thing that just is on the sides that doesn't matter. That it, to me, was his life, was the life of
what they're showing seems to indicate they just leaned into that.
Yeah.
That they got what made the game special and went for that. Now, obviously, this is a slice. This is early. But that's in that long preview. That's a lot of what I gleaned from.
That's awesome.
Have you ever had that experience in a game before outside of those little moments?
Not knowing what matters and what doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No, right? Yeah. You know what a main quest is. You know what a side quest is. I mean, maybe GTA kind of used to do it in an interesting way where it wasn't beating you over the head of like, this is the gold star, right? It would be the letters. And you're like, well, in the beginning you start, you're like, oh, how do I, oh, okay, if I do enough of them, that opens up this next thing, which is the main gate to the next thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I like about this idea. We were talking about God of War and how well it sort of redefines what a single player game can be. Breath of the Wild was that for me for multiplayer. And I'm kind of wondering if only a year after Breath of the Wild, I'm going to get for multiplayer? Oh, or not multiplayer, pardon me, open world.
Okay.
Thank you. I just don't know how to use
words. I was going to say, I thought you were going to make an interesting argument of like the multiplayerness of us all being in the same world, but not.
And no, then how you talk I'm not nearly clever
I was
enough.
I was there if you wanted to throw me the thread. I'll try to make you a little story blanket.
Actually, here it's a lasso, my friend.
Oh, my apologies, everybody.
That's right. Throwing out lasso. Lasso of truth. Just throw it around. You find out what's
up. It looks like the vigilante.
That was a tangent right there, moving back to the main story. Open world game, and maybe a year later we're going to see that redefined again. Hype is always suspect,
of course,
but they've actually seen some of what's there, and this fits the MO of where Rockstar was building in GTA 5.
Yeah.
Point number two. Teaser news number two. We saw John.
Yeah. We did. Fresh scars or fresh cuts.
Fresh cuts. Yeah, that's right. What do you think of John Marston?
I like John Marston. Mm-hmm. I obviously have a connection with him, playing with him for as many hours as we did in Red Dead. I liked that his story was over. My hope here is that what we see from him is passing. I hope real quick it's... I love just the premise, the elevator pitch, right? That you're part of this gang.
Yeah.
Bank robbery goes wrong. You guys are on the run from bounty hunters and the police. Or the cop, or whatever they call
them.
Yeah. Coppers.
Yeah, the coppers.
Marshals.
Well, it's 1899. The era of outlawry is just about over. Yeah. I mean, if you go much farther into the future, if you want to be an outlaw running around being chased by the government, you're John Dillinger.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy guns and a car. The age of the Old West bandit didn't last very long, and it was never a great life. And I think this game's going to reflect that a lot. You ever seen The Wild Bunch?
No.
I think it's going to lean in. That's another episode we will absolutely have to have eventually. We're going to talk about Tombstone here in a minute. But
yeehaw!
Yeah, exactly. But I think The Wild Bunch talks about that, the end of the age of banditry and being able to be an outlaw. However, everything I'm seeing indicates this is not John's story.
Yeah, no, and that's my hope, is that I hope we see... it was cool to see him in the trailer. I hope it's like a crossover, what in... Was it Vice City where the protagonist from 3 showed up?
No, yeah, yeah, it was, he was in Vice City. Yeah, because you went to New York at one point in Vice City, didn't you?
I forget.
Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out the timelines.
It's either Vice City or San Andreas, but I'm almost positive it's Vice City where you go to New York.
It's like a nice little nod of that. Oh, yeah. I know that guy. I know where he's going. But I hope it's to be like, all right, cool. Yeah, I'm breaking off in my all right, cool. We're on the run. This is what's happening. They're after us. Half the gang goes that way, half the gang goes this way, and we're with the gang that isn't with John.
What I'm expecting is we're going to be Arthur, for maybe the whole game. I mean, they did the character switching thing in 5, and we're very proud of that. That's complex. It's hard to do. They might lean into that more. But I'm more expecting we're going to play as Arthur, and we're going to get insight into John and other characters from that observer's position, from outside looking in. And that we're going to spend most of our time in John's head, or pardon me, Arthur's head,
yeah,
dealing with our world, and our involvement with John will be exactly how much we want it to be. I don't think he's going to be thrust on us. I'd put it that way.
I think they'll want to rip him away early because they don't want it to be the same old, same old. They want to keep you on your toes. I forget in Red Dead Redemption because it's been a long time. You're playing it right now. Do we get what the separation between him and the gang was
like? We get
what
some of it,
right? But, like, you have to imagine this is going to be planting the seeds for that. Yeah. So if we could just break the group up and everybody goes their separate ways in the beginning, not for good, obviously they'll be coming back together in and out of each other's lives.
Yeah, I bet you we see a lot of each other, but I don't think they're going to hit us over the head with John. Okay. Again, that doesn't fit. I mean, has Rockstar ever done that in any game?
No.
Just had a protagonist that we bring back and make a major part of what's happening.
No.
Yeah. I mean, they're always willing to try new things, but I think that's unlikely. The other thing is this idea of, I want to lean back into this a little bit, that blurring of the side quest stuff, but the idea of a world with a life of its own from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
Obviously, the trailer was beautiful. You saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous, and the color palette stuff we talked about last week. But you ever see the movie Jumanji?
Of course.
What did you think of the scenes where they cut away to the NPCs talking?
That's great, right?
Yeah. Like, what did you like about that?
I mean, like, that's what you always want to believe is happening, right? Uh-huh. You want to believe that there's something under the hood, that these characters have a life, that they're doing their own thing. It reminds me a lot of, as we describe it, and I know this is obviously very fortuitous, obviously, in terms of timing, but it reminds me a lot of Westworld, where Westworld, like, we got to see what was interesting about season one was getting to see the hosts go about that. All right, cool. This is what I do all day.
Yeah.
And you see that they actually are, she's buying the condensed milk to go back home, blah, blah, blah. But there's variables in it of somebody finding it, somebody interacting, somebody talking to them, something changing, and how that then, you know, mutates their story and what's happening for the day for them.
Exactly.
In the same way, if they're doing that here, that's what's going to happen in our game, where I interrupt the guy who's going to go cook for us, and that doesn't happen in your game, so he still cooks for everything.
Yeah, and something else suddenly occurs, and then a bobcat wanders into camp that day, and I'm excited about this. There's actually a lot more news to go through. We're going to save that for next week because there's just so much, and we have other stuff to move on to here really quick. So, very quickly, our next segment. I love those segments. On the Trail, and On the Trail is the beginning of my playthrough of the original Red Dead Redemption, returning to that first game. And I started it up this week, got it loaded there on that Xbox One backward compatibility, and hopped right in. Now, not playing on the One X, because I don't have a One X.
Sure.
Apparently very pretty with a One X, but right now, playing it on the regular I wondered what it was going to be like, Greg, to go back to it. Have you gone back to it?
No.
You know what?
Undead Nightmare was my last time that I ever touched everything.
So here's the good news, folks. If you decide to play along, and this would be a good week to do it, if you want to hop back in, it's worth going back to. This is an old game. It's almost a decade old now.
Jeez.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It's crazy to say.
And guess what? It's still really, really good. It's a true classic.
Yeah.
I spent enough time with it this week to go, oh, my memories were not rose-colored.
Good.
There is that first... Somebody asked me, hey, you know, that first hour, is it... The first hour is the first hour. It is learning how to navigate a world, getting into the story. It is very tutorially, but it's interesting story tutorial with good dialogue and a lot of hooks and fascinating characters. You meet Bonnie very quickly there. You learn the basics of, there's a lot of mechanics in that game that they were introducing, the way that writing works, the way that obviously the quick draw and the duels work. They've got to make all that familiar to you and acclimate you to your freedom of choice. That process is much less painful than I thought it would be. Yeah, I mean, I probably burned through all that stuff in an hour. And after that, there I was in my world, and I was pretty much free to do what I wanted.
Yeah.
I ended up, unsurprisingly, using a lot of that freedom to play poker.
Of course.
Now, you mentioned to me before the show, you've never played poker.
No, I don't know how.
Okay, so I'm going to teach you to play poker with real money at some point.
Okay.
But poker was one, I spent more time playing poker than I spent wandering the range in the original Red Dead, I think. I played a lot of poker.
Yeah.
Because the poker engine, and it's really not bad at all. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And you sit there on the table and play the cards. Poker Night at the Inventory, I played a lot of.
Yeah.
So I wandered around, found my poker game. But immediately, my real joy was the anecdotes started right off the bat, even in the tutorial. As I'm racing alongside Bonnie in the obligatory learn how to ride a horse, we got to race Mr. Marston. I'd forgotten about Mr. Marston. racing along there, and there's the bridge ahead, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to cut ahead, and I leap, and my horse just plummets off this bridge headlong into a rock wall that I did not know was there, and just, it was like a Looney Tunes splat. I was Wile E. Coyote. If it had been a cartoon, the little, I'd stuck against the wall like this. And I was like, it just happened. Yeah. I was just playing in a scripted part.
Just how this world plays.
And this beautiful, beautiful moment like that breaks out right there. And sure enough, I get on my horse and I go out to ride across the range. And I'm riding along the road and I encounter a stranger and I find a treasure map and I clear a fortress out of bandits and I discover the combat's still fun.
Yeah.
But this week's experience was very simple. I rode along on that ridge just as the sun came up. And I didn't plan to ride along a ridge just as the sun came up, but I did.
Yeah.
And the world woke up and I was all alone and the music hit just the right key by pure happenstance. Mm-hmm. And I was transported. And what was very strange about it, and I don't want to babble here long about this, I didn't live in the American West. Last time I played Red Dead.
Yeah.
I'd never seen the American West last time I played Red Dead. Yeah. I was a different person. I had never, ever seen California. I'd never been to the Dakotas. I'd never seen this. I'd never been to Keck at that point. I don't think I'd ever even been to Kansas.
Yeah.
And these are not fictional places anymore.
Mm, mm.
I've watched the sun come up over these lands. And wow, even on that ancient rendering engine, did they ever get it right?
Yeah. Beautiful game.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about, though, you know, is that you didn't plan that to happen. The music just happens to happen. That's what Red Dead is. That's why Red Dead's so special. And like trying to put that into words for people when they write into like Kind of Funny Games Daily or whatever, right? If I missed it and I just don't understand why people love it so much, it's because you have those crazy natural moments where you do get lost in this world and you aren't feeling like you're playing a video game. You feel like you're living this life on the open range, which is so weird and stupid to say, but that's what it is.
And it feels strangely, even though you're a cowboy dressed in a crazy cowboy outfit and you're doing crazy stuff and you're meeting crazy people in the wilderness and tying people to train tracks.
Yeah.
There's still a weird groundedness to it that feels like reality in the best possible way. I love it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. That's.
I have a question before you switch off.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you're getting ready. How are you choosing where to start and stop? You know what I mean? And how are you trying to give people milestones if they're playing along at home too?
I'm playing slow right now to give people time to catch up.
Okay.
And I will continue to. My goal is to have the game done by the time the new game comes out.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But that's several months away.
Sure, you got time.
So, I'm afraid if I give people too many milestones for the next week, that I won't play Red Dead the way it's meant to be played.
Let it happen.
Instead, what I want to tell people for this week, if you're playing along with me, I played through the tutorial. I've done the first couple of missions there with the town sheriff. I've cleared out a fortress there at Twin Rocks. And I've done some wandering around. And if you're trying to play along, that's the pacing. Next week, I'm going to follow that storyline a little more and gradually work my way back toward dealing with Bill in the fort and all that.
Yeah.
But at this point, play through the tutorial and doing some wandering around. If you want to play ahead, you know,
more work your way toward that fort.
But that's where we're at right now. Thank you for asking.
No problem.
So moving on to the next segment, my friend. Let's talk about Tombstone. Greg Miller each and every week here on Red Dead Radio. We don't just talk about Red Dead Redemption or cowboy video games. We talk about the influence of Westerns in pop culture because Red Dead is such a cinematically influenced game and experience. And it's obvious that Rockstar dug into all kinds of wonderful stuff for that. Let's talk about this here movie, Tombstone. I asked you, hey, what's a Western you want to talk about on this show? You said, without much hesitation, Tombstone.
You said, what's your favorite Western of all time?
Yeah, why?
And I said Tombstone, and then I did a thing where I was like, wait, let me make sure.
Yeah.
Because it's a question I don't think about often. You know what I mean? A lot of, what's your favorite video game? Got that. What's the best Oreo? Got that.
Okay.
Favorite place to get chicken wings, of course.
What's the best Oreo?
Berry Burst.
Very good.
Yeah. And now that's your best everyday Oreo that I could just eat over and over again.
Okay.
If I'm like treating myself, it's going to be the golden birthday cake Oreo. But that's you can only have so many of.
That's very special.
The pumpkin spice, very good as well. But I digress. Yeah, it was a clear the mechanism moment, right? Blank slate. What's the best Western? I was like Tombstone.
Okay.
And like, yeah, you ask why, right? And it's thinking back, I was like, when I said it, why? I don't know. Kurt Russell's great. It's a cool
Kurt Russell
thing,
is great.
You know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. But watching it again two nights ago with Jen, like, it. I don't know. I think the last time I watched Tombstone, you know, start to finish, all in one sitting, I must have been 12. You know what I mean? And since then, it'll pop up on television or something. You'll watch a part of it or you'll drop in and out of it. You know what I mean? And you'll get things, commercial breaks, it'll be on TV or whatever. But to sit there and be dedicated to it and now be an adult watching it, it's funny to watch it and realize what they're doing. And what they're doing, of course, is making a modern movie, but making it feel like a classic Western.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they're driving it home from, I was trying to get to it on IMDb, the narrator at the front and back of the film. I know he's famous.
Oh, Robert Mitchum.
Yep. And I know he's like a cowboy. Like he's the Western dude.
Yeah.
And the way they set it up and then the way it just like, when it ends and it's like, he just like runs through all this shit in their lives, right?
Yeah.
Blah, blah. And like some other Western film guy was there and he wept.
Yeah.
Bam. And that's the end of it. It's like, wow. Like, all right. Beat me over the head that like, this is it. But like watching it, you know, I don't think Jen has no, you know, being French Canadian, has no leg to stand on in this. I don't think she knows Westerns well. And I don't think she'd seen Tombstone.
Okay.
And she's just like, why is the music being so dramatic? And why? And I'm like, because it's a Western. Like they're leaning into trying to give a film with modern people that my dad loves old Westerns, and they're trying to make that happen again.
I feel like Silverado and Tombstone are twin brothers.
Sure.
Like they're very different movies in terms of their casts and the times they were made, but they are both spectacularly successful efforts to do exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Create an old style Western in a modern movie, and man, they nail it. Is it still your favorite Western after watching
God,
it as an
course.
Adult?
Yeah. And it's like watching it just like, I couldn't get over like, and I obviously remember, of course, like, okay, yeah, Kurt Russell's in there, right? Yeah, and it's like, but I'm like,
but that cast.
That's the thing is, and Val Kilmer's in there. But like walking through, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. I kind of forgot about Sam Elliott because Sam Elliott's in it before Sam Elliott's a big, before he's like the cowboy.
Beef.
Sam Elliott is, yeah.
It's what for dinner.
Yeah, exactly, right? Have you watched his newest one, Hero?
Oh, I haven't watched it.
Which is kind of like, it's not obviously, but it's kind of parallel. It's like he's doing like a, these commercials were baked beans.
No,
barbecue baked beans.
I missed this.
He's an actor who got famous being a cowboy, and now he's like in the past his prime and trying to find his thing. It's really good. You gotta watch it.
My favorite Sam Elliott modern role is his other Ron on Parks and Rec.
Oh no, I don't watch.
He's so great as other Ron.
But then you go through this cast, right? Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Powers fucking Booth.
That guy was rad.
Of Nashville fame and eventually the MCU. I was like, why is he in this one thing? Turns out he was like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I missed it.
And I'm going to come out and say this. Curly Bill Brocious, Powers Booth, best role. Nails it.
He's really good in Nashville.
What's that?
He's really good in Nashville.
He is really good in Nashville.
He was Raina James's dad for season one. Wanted to put a baseball stadium in.
He
was great
that.
In it. Like, when he comes out of the opium den and like starts just shooting at everything, and then he kills the sheriff of the town, and then afterwards you see he didn't mean to do it.
Right.
Like it is like, oh man, you're a shitty kid. Oh no, like okay.
You totally did not mean to shoot
that guy. I'm empathizing with your strung out drug addled ass right now.
By the way, that is a reasonably historically accurate depiction of what happened in that moment.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, he did not mean to kill that guy. Wyatt Earp really did get Curly Bill off for murder.
Yeah.
Like he's the reason Curly Bill was not prosecuted for murdering that guy. And he really did kill Curly Bill a couple of years later in a gunfight where there were bullets going through his coat. Like, both those things actually happen.
All right, I'll take it. Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, of course.
Yeah.
Mr. 80s. Yeah, Mr. Terminator, 80s, exactly. Aliens. Charlton Heston, forgot all about him when he popped up. I was like, right, that's an awesome callback again to, like, here we are with the classic. Jason Priestley's in it.
Yep.
Just being this guy who I read, what I'm reading into, right, is closeted. Falls in love with Billy Zane's character, of course, at first sight. Can't make those feelings known or anything. But
but you do see that there.
Yeah, exactly. But... Thomas Hayden Church is there. Yes, Sandman himself from Spider-Man 3.
That's right.
Dana Delaney, who I know of, but like I can't.
Yeah,
like,
she's been a lot of things.
Michael Rooker in like the first role I've ever seen. And don't get me wrong, I'm not like Mr. IMDb for Michael Rooker, a.k.a. Yondu. But I mean, like, I remember in Mallrats thinking Michael Rooker looks old, right?
I forgot he was.
And then he was in that horror movie too that I always screw up when I talk about it. But like here, like you're a baby Michael Rooker when I'm watching this. Yeah, Billy Zane though also a baby, and then Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, he's just sitting there playing cards at the table.
Damn, what an age for actors that all these people were in this movie before they were huge deals.
That line went, and on top of that, the superb directing, great action directing, and this movie, the writing when Billy Bob Thornton thanks Wyatt Earp for not killing him.
Yeah.
Like just that really, you know, but Val Kilmer obviously stealing.
Oh, sure.
Every, you know, you might go now.
I'll beat you, Huckleberry.
I don't know. But, oh, it's just what?
Yeah.
In a movie full of great lines, which favorite?
Oh, it's gotta be, it's because of delivery and then just in the moment too, but it's gotta be when they come to try to kill Wyatt Earp on the train when they think he's leaving disgrace, and he comes up from behind and shoots him, and he just saves the one guy, and he's just like, what is it? You run, you cur.
You run, you cur.
And you tell all the other curs, I'm coming, and hell's coming with me.
It's pretty rad.
Fucking Kurt Russell kills it in this flick.
He does.
And not only just being like, okay, cool, I'm going to have this badass mustache. Not only I'm going to be this manly man, Wyatt Earp, blah, 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 but like, when Josephine walks in that first time and he's just, oh, hell.
Yeah,
like, he knows he's like, screwed.
Oh, no.
And then when he's riding and it happens again, he's like, oh, hell. And then when his brother dies, right? When Bill Paxton dies or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes out there crying and like that could be overacted and stupid and what, and it's not.
It's not.
Totally like, wow, you're seeing this guy come apart.
And it's such a Western moment that they somehow managed to make it tonally not cheesy and beautiful. It's sad. And I mean, he's literally standing in the rain, like covered in
his
brother's blood.
Yeah.
And the two women that he's involved with are both on either side of him.
Yeah,
and that shouldn't work.
No, it shouldn't. And that's the thing, you watch it, like, it's so, you can easily see it tipping over to being like, whatever. But like, at this point, I'm so in, and I'm so into all these characters. Yeah. And it's like the thing of, you know, I feel like it's obviously hinted at and done, but like Sam Elliott, you know, his character going to become the town sheriff is like such a light switch flip.
Yeah.
But it's like, all right, well, I saw him being disappointed. And like, I'm not like judging it badly on that, but it's the way. Even once both brothers go, Wyatt Earp's like, no, I don't want to do this again. You know what I mean? I've already done Dodge City. I'm not about to do it again.
Yeah,
like,
I'm done. I killed a guy.
You don't
want to
play.
Want to do that.
Yeah, you don't want to play how this is going to play.
And a lot of that, again, this movie, very Hollywood.
Sure.
Very Hollywood. But as Westerns go, one of the most historically accurate, at least in terms of theme, that you'll find.
Okay.
Which is really odd considering how Hollywood it is.
Yeah.
Now, the Wyatt Earp Western with Kevin Costner really does dig into the history end. It suffers as a movie for that to a point.
Sure.
But it does reflect a little more probably the way it actually rolled out. But things like Wyatt Earp not killing many people, or things like the weird relationship between him and Doc Holliday and how that played out, or it does cover a lot of those crazy historic bases. It's one of the stories that was almost larger than life. I mean, the Cowboys were a real gang.
Sure. Now, here's a question I have for you. Mr. Jared Petty knows everything in the whole wide world. Jen asked me this, and I've said this before. I don't think I've ever said it on a podcast. You get an exclusive here.
All right.
Marrying someone from another country where English is their second language is such a great primer for when we have kids. Because we're just watching. It's like, I don't understand. Why are they called cowboys? I thought and I was like, that's a great question. I have no idea why the gang that are cowboys, eventually cowboys becomes common nomenclature for Red Dead and everybody in a hat and on a horse.
Well, people were called cowboys before the gang.
Okay.
The gang just took the name The Cowboys with a capital C and called themselves that. They really were a kind of a loosely affiliated group of lawless people in the midst of a place where there just wasn't a lot of law, and what law was there was corrupt.
Law dog.
I mean, when you have the sheriff riding after them with the posse made up of cowboys, remember that at the end, Sheriff Beans following them? That really happened.
Yeah.
He just deputized a bunch of cowboys and went after the federal marshal.
Nice.
It's just weird. Wyatt Earp didn't kill nearly as many people as he does at the end of that movie, but they did go kill.
That was the fun, like, tonal shift of that, right? Where he's like, listen, I only killed one guy before, and you don't want that on your conscience. Yeah. And then it's like, I'm killing everybody in cold blood, brutally. It was like, yeah, all right, Wyatt, whatever.
He did kill, like, four or five people after that, and at least a couple of them he probably did kill in cold blood.
Sure.
Well, they did have it coming, and the judge in Tombstone, after he tried to convict a lot of these guys, and the judge said, next time, something to the effect of, I don't want to miss this quote, next time, if you leave them in the bushes, they can't testify. Like, they can't get off if they're dead.
Well, that's my favorite thing, too, after the shootout, right? And they all chase off, and the whatever, the U.S. Marshal, who's also famous, but I don't have his name in front of me.
Yeah.
When he walks up, and Earp's like, I'm not going to let you arrest us today. You
know what I mean? That actually happened.
I'm sure.
He did. That part of the movie is real.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Sheriff Bean walked up to him, and he's like, I don't think you're going to arrest me today.
Yeah. What a movie. What a flick.
Weird. Yeah.
Great.
I'd love to dig into it more. We're running short on time. Okay. We got another actually kind of funny show to record.
Kind of funny games, coming up next.
That's right, coming up very soon. But we will go back to the gunfight at the OK Corral. We haven't touched on nearly all of this because there's several other movies about it.
Yeah.
Eventually, we're going to have a very conclusive OK Corral themed episode, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then we'll do a roundup very quickly with Red Dead. Where do you see the influence in Red Dead from Tombstone?
Oh, I don't know if I'm versed enough in Westerns overall to credit anything in Red Dead to Tombstone. I would think the same themes you see, though, would be the fact that Tombstone becomes a town I believe in real quick. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it becomes, I like how they, it's such a weird thing of setting up, even like literally Wyatt Earp gets to town, right? Meets the guys and it gets walked around. He's like, all right, yeah, but why isn't this one? Why isn't the Oriental successful? Oh, well, you know, people don't go there. And he goes in and takes it over. And it's like, that is such a video game first quest.
It is.
Of go in there, beat that guy up. This is how you'll earn your money to use it here. And so like,
that's a great
Tombstone's, the town of Tombstone looks so much like the town of Red Dead. And now granted, that's because Red Dead wants to look like the Westerns, but I think it speaks to Tombstone, how this movie Tombstone did such a great job of having a fully functional, realized town there where you saw, you know, your casket makers and you saw everybody out there doing their thing and having their job and all these.
I agree. That's beautiful. I think it does for Red Dead, kind of did for games what Tombstone did for Westerns, along with Unforgiven. It helped bring that mode of storytelling into the modern consciousness in the medium and do it really well. Took something classic and reinstituted it. Final question about Tombstone. Best mustache in Tombstone?
Oh, it's got to be Wyatt Earp.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great mustaches in Tombstone. Yeah. But I mean, Kurt Russell is just on another level.
I'm going with Virgil, actually.
Elliott's mustache. See, here's the thing, and I think I might be grading on a curve because I know how Sam Elliott's mustache looks in other movies.
Yeah.
Whether I'm talking about Roadhouse or
The Big Lebowski.
That's what I was reaching for. Yeah. Or even Hero. Like,
yeah.
Hero's a great movie. You should watch it.
Okay. I'm excited about this.
Okay, cool. It's a fun thing of like alternate universe Sam Elliott, who would have been in this movie.
Sam Elliott is my man crush.
He's great, right?
I would kiss that man on the lips.
Okay, well, that ensures you'll never meet him.
Well, that's probably true. Moving ahead very quickly here. Running out of time, so let's do this. Luck of the draw. Draw the top card. We got four questions on random topics from the audience. Have nothing to do with Westerns whatsoever.
Okay.
Depending on what suit you draw here, that's going to decide the question. Let's go for it, Greg.
I'm drawing.
You're drawing what you draw.
Spades.
All right, got a spades. Spades is Ross Hill's question. Portraying you swapped lives with the person you're talking to. What do you think enjoy most about being them?
Oh, okay.
The other person responds with the perceived benefits of their life. Greg, if you were me, what do you think enjoy about being me?
I think you have the most positivity of anyone I've ever met. I feel like, and I know that, don't get me wrong, I know that behind the scenes, you, as we all do, deal with drama, bad thoughts, depression, everything else. But you have such an interesting lens on the world. I would love to have that because I feel it makes you such an eloquent speaker where you say stuff and I don't know if, I know you do it because it's how you speak, but it makes it for such a good storytelling mechanism, whether it's you at a bar, whether it's you with your wife, whether it's you on the show, the way you'll slow down and start really meticulously choosing your words. Whereas when I get excited about something, I speed through them, slur them, and just say whatever the hell else I'm trying to think about and get out there.
That's very kind of you.
No problem. What would you want out of my life?
Couple of things. From a greedy perspective, I think it would be rad to have the platform you've built for yourself with your talent and your effort. I think it would just be fun to have the opportunities you've created for yourself be a normalized part of your life, which you've never taken it for granted in my eyes at all.
Sure.
But I do think it would be both extremely exhausting and incredibly exciting to live the life that you do vocationally.
Okay.
I wish I had your unending energy. And again, I've seen you tired, but you do seem to have a reservoir of energy that I envy, even on top of your exhaustion. But I think most of all, I'd love the opportunity to do what you do using your powers for good. I joke, and I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to brown nose you here, but I think for the most part, you look at what you've been given as an opportunity, not what you've been given, what you've earned and been given as opportunities to make the world a better place wherever you touch. You try to help people. You try to open doors for other people. That has been consistent with you pretty much the whole time I've known you. And I think that that would be a very tiring but rewarding way to live.
So, thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
That'd be mine.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Can I ask my Virgil, Kevin Smith, Kevin, to come over? You're texting me about the Comcast, right?
Oh, we got something going on here?
Yeah, our internet sucks. Here, you just take my phone and keep DMing with them.
All right. So we're having a little trouble here. That might lead up to some, oh goodness, some Games Daily delays. Wow, we are really getting close. I need to get us out of there. All right. So being very, very quick, Pony Express, we've got our first batch of letters. We are running out of time, so we're going to go through these real quick.
Lightning round.
I see it. Lightning round from James Davis. I see a lot of people asking, do I need to play Red Dead Redemption 1 before jumping into 2? This includes myself. How do you think Rockstar will accommodate this crowd? Do you think they'll even have to?
I mean, Red Dead's an amazing game. I am of the mind you should have played it by now. Right now, do I think you need to? No, because I'd be afraid of you burning out. I think you're replaying it. I think I get to come in with this rose-colored glasses, my memories of Red Dead, maybe not so much. Like, for me, I always talk about it. Like, I was all in on Red Dead, and then when Mexico hit, I felt like it slowed down.
Yeah.
And I put it down for a few weeks, and then surprisingly came back to it, which never happens for me. Beat it, loved it. I feel like what Red Dead 2 is going to do, or Red Dead Redemption 2, is go in and... What didn't people like? Everyone says that one part, right? So I feel like pacing is going to be tightened up in a way that I'm going to play this one, and when I finish it, be like, man, it was awesome, and it was more Red Dead, and it was, you know what I mean? It was what I wanted out of it. I think you're going to miss John Marston moments, a Bonnie moment. There's going to be call forwards, I guess, instead of backs. Call forwards to what will come, or call backs to what happened in the last game. That'll be there for us and be neat. Like, oh, I know that place. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think they'll be there, but Rockstar's been pretty clear this is a self-contained story.
Yeah.
And that I encourage you to play Red Dead 1, Red Dead Redemption. They're being pretty transparent. You don't have to.
Yeah.
And you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
They know that a lot of people played it. They also know a lot more people are going to play this one. Second from Mark. When I think about Tombstone, I think, about all the great mustaches.
Hell yeah.
Do you think there's ever been a greater collection of mustaches on screen since then?
Justice League.
Oh, that was hilarious. I love that. That was very funny.
I don't think there has been. And again, I just can't get over the cast. Yep. You know what I mean? I remember the big players in it, but getting in there and just seeing people, person after person, I totally, again, Powers Booth, I still know, with all due respect, I think, rest in peace, Powers
Booth.
Yeah,
rest in peace.
I always remember Powers Booth and everything I know him as an old man. So to see him as Curly Bill and be like, oh man, you're like a contemporary.
Yeah, it's like, weird. Woo, that's great. Yeah. So I have more letters here, but we are absolutely out of time. Therefore, I'm going to read those on the next episode, episode 3. Final little bit here before we step out.
Sure.
It's our Red Dead Redemption Poker Tournament. You're going to be our first player. Greg, you're going
to
get a poker.
So I'm guaranteed to be champion.
You're guaranteed to be champion this week. And we're going to keep playing poker every week. Whoever's got the best hand, they're the champion.
You're just going to remember that. Okay, yeah. I see.
So I'm going to deal you 5 cards here. Then we're going to play a 5-card draw. You're going to look at them. You don't know the rules to poker, so this should be great.
Yeah.
Look at your 5 cards.
Tell me how I have to put down discard,
Yeah, you
right?
have to tell me how many you want to replace here.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
I'm going to replace 2.
Two. Sticking 2. 2 cards. All right. Show your hand.
Hold on, let me organize them.
He's organizing them. Right, organize them. So I think you don't know how poker works. It's very exciting.
A full house.
A full house, he says. A full house. That is definitely not a full house. But that is absolutely a pair of nines.
Yeah, see, okay. Right? That's what I was trying. I lined them up. Yeah, look at that. King 10, 9, 9, 4.
Yeah, that is in poker a pair of nines.
And I discarded a six and I discarded another four.
Okay, well, you probably. Did you have the four before?
No, the four came in after I discarded that four.
Okay, you know what? Came out with a pair of nine. Pair of nines. Five card draw. You can win. I've won plenty of hands with
I'm
a pair of nines.
Champion! Yeah!
Will the next guest beat Greg Miller in the poker tournament?
Who's the next
Find
guest?
Out next time. That's a very good question. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you later. I should probably be able to announce that. But
Sam
I don't
Elliott.
Know for sure yet.
We're getting you Sam Elliott.
I'd like that very much.
He's like, what's a red dude?
Yeah, I'll let you know soon. Friends, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this. If you want to see Greg Miller do more, where do you find that?
Kindafunny.com. That's K-I-N-D-A, not kind of. Kindafunny.com.
Yeah, might spot me there every now and then as well. I get to hang out with him every now and then. Red Dead Radio, the Red Dead Redemption podcast, is a part of the Hop, Blip, and a Jump network, hopblipjump.com. You want to know more about us there? You want to back the show on Patreon, do other things like that? Want to talk to some nice people? That's the place to do it. You can also visit that at reddeadradio.com. If you want to mail us, it's mail@reddeadradio.com. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Giddy up, saddle up. See you next time, friends.
Hop, Blip, and the Jump network. That is hot.
Thanks to Patreon producers Robert Nieder, Austin Riley, Ed Calderon, and Jonathan, whose generous support makes this show possible.